Thank you for that introduction. Although I must say, omitted one particularly important part of my background, one achievement left off. And that is, I was 37 years old before I had a year without a spring break. And that is something to which you all should aspire, although I have to tell you that the transition is difficult. At some point, the real world will intervene. Although I've heard more than a few commencement speeches, this is the first one I've given, and I greatly appreciate the opportunity and the invitation to do so. But in preparing these remarks, I've struggled for quite a while about what to say. Should I talk about the exciting world of electrical engineering? Should I talk about the exciting world of patent law? Or perhaps I should just give some wise principles for life. You know, some of those Benjamin Franklin-like platitudes are so popular this time of year. So I look for some of those. Never eat more than you can lift. They can't chase you if you don't run. If the enemy is in range, so are you. But none of those ideas seem quite right. Can anything really be said in the commencement address that has not already been said many times before? After all, there are only so many ways that one can say, go forth and conquer. So I struggle to find a topic worthy of the occasion. What should I choose? How should I decide? And with those questions, I had my topic. I decided to talk about deciding, about decisions. So much in our lives depends upon the choices and the decisions that we make. How do we make those choices? How should we make those choices? You hear much today about freedom of choice. And it's true that God has given us free will. We have the power to choose. But while we are free to choose our actions, we are not free to choose the consequences of those actions. A true mark of wisdom is the ability to anticipate those consequences. Our God-given right to choose is a God-given responsibility to choose wisely. You often hear of the pathway of life. But for me, there is no pathway. But instead only a dark forest with countless paths leading off in countless directions. And in fact, at no time in history we have more choices than we do right now, at this very moment. And the more choices we have, the more difficult it is to make a decision. We can do what we want, where we want, with whom we want, and at no point in your lives are you likely to have more choices than you do right now. At this moment, where to live, where to work, whom to marry. Some decisions are big and some are small. But at the time, it's not always easy to tell which is which. Some decisions that seem small may turn out later to have been life-changing. That uncertainty makes it all the more important that we have some basis for making the decisions in our lives. And we have many bases from which to choose. We can decide to do what others are doing. We can decide to do what feels right to us, what feels good. We can decide to do nothing. But even that is a decision. And there are many today on that path. The world is full of people today who just can't make up their mind. Winston Churchill described such people as decided only to be undecided. Resolved to be irresolute, and adamant for drift. For that drifting group, nothing is delivered. Life for them is simply a game of pinball, in which they aimlessly bounce about until at last they miss a paddle and drop through the chute to end the game. They don't care what path they're on because they don't care where they're going. In preparing these remarks, I came across a poem by Robert Frost. It's long been a favorite of mine. The Road Not Taken, I'm sure you've heard. It's about making choices, and it ends with a memorable line, two roads diverged in the wood, and I took the one less troubled by, and that has made all the difference. And that line has no doubt been quoted in countless graduation exercises to tell countless graduates all dressed exactly alike, that individuality is the key to success. But when you read the entire poem, what you discover is that it has a very different message. The poem begins with a description of those two root roads diverging in the yellow wood. And the poet tells us that the two roads were about the same. He was having trouble telling them apart. If one was really less traveled, it was hardly noticeable. It's many years later, the poet tells us, ages and ages hence, that he looks back on that decision. And he determines then that one of the roads must have really been less traveled. That road that seemingly made such a difference in his life. Surely the course of his life had not been determined by a random turn in the woods so long ago. Or had it? When you read the entire poem, what you see is not individualism. What you see is regret. After all, the title of the poem is not the less traveled road. The title is The Road Not Taken. Yogi Berra said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. And in your life, you will come upon many forks in the road where you will be called upon to make a decision. Do I go left? Do I go right? Or perhaps I just stand there wondering if I should go left or right. Or maybe I should turn back. How can I know which way to go? You will ask such questions many times. And absent guidance, you may, like the poet, find yourself one day wondering about what the road is not taking and about the seeming randomness of life. When you come to one of those forks on the road, how can you choose the correct path? Well, what you need are road signs. And that's what I want to talk about today. Three road signs that will help you find your way through that dark forest as you come to those forks on the road. Three choices that you will face not once, but many times in your lives. The first road sign presents us with a choice between truth and desire. Ultimately, there are only two real philosophies of life. A philosophy that conforms desire to truth, or a philosophy that conforms truth to desire. As Christians, we know that desire must be in submission to truth. But the worldly reality is that truth and desire are almost always on a collision course. And what happens when that collision occurs? Do we conform our desire to the truth, or do we twist the truth to conform it to our desire? This conflict is an ancient one. Think about Eve. She knew the truth, and yet she was standing before a tree, the Bible tells us, to be desired. What to do? She ate the fruit, but she did more than that. The Bible tells us she believed the serpent and was deceived. When faced with a conflict between truth and desire, she chose desire and twisted the truth to match that desire. How many times in history has that bad decision been repeated? Jesus faced that same choice in his first temptation in the wilderness. Paul was talking about that choice when he said, those who are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. That verse describes the conflict between truth and desire. And it tells the outcome of that conflict for those who belong to Christ. When you see truth and desire on that road sign, choose truth. May not be the pleasant way, may not be the easy way, it is the right way. The second road sign presents us with a choice between one and many. If I could leave you with only one piece of advice today, it would be this. Live a focused life in this unfocused world, and you will succeed. Your focus is the laser beam that cuts through the fog of mediocrity that is engulfing this world. When we look at those who have accomplished much, what we see is focus. We just spoke about the Apostle Paul. He certainly understood the power of focus. He wrote, "But one thing I do, forgetting what lies ahead and behind, and pressing toward that goal. This one thing I do," he said. He had a goal. He was focused on that goal. A Christian life is a focused life. Indeed, a successful life in any area is a focused life. As a patent attorney, I have a special appreciation for one of this country's greatest inventors, Thomas Edison. Over his career, Edison filed 1,700 patents in the United States Patent Office and 1,200 foreign patents. The world calls him a great inventor. I call him a dream plant. In 1 year alone, at the peak of his career, he filed over 100 successful patent applications. He didn't give interviews, but a reporter once camped outside his laboratory for 3 weeks to get an interview. And finally, Edison agreed. And that reporter asked Edison the secret of his success. Here's what Edison told him. "The secret to success is the ability to apply your physical and mental energy to one problem incessantly without growing weary." He continued, "You do something all day long, don't you? Everyone does. If you get up at 7 a.m. and go to bed at 11 p.m., you put in 16 good hours. And it is certain with most that they've been doing something all the time. The only trouble is that they do it about a great many things," Edison said, "and I do it about one. If they took the time to question and apply it in one direction to one object, they would succeed." Edison understood the power of a focused life. Focus is vital. And yet nothing is more difficult in this modern age of buzzing Blackberries and blaring TVs. And there's so many distractions in the world that would prevent us from being focused. Focus prevents us from being sidetracked by all that. Focus keeps us on track when pathways lead off in every direction. Focus keeps us on the pathway toward our goal. Spiritual focus is a primary theme of the book of James, which is not surprising. He grew up with Christ. He personally witnessed focus of Christ. James tells us, "Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Purify your hearts, you double-minded." Notice that James links purity of heart with focus, spiritual focus. Those who choose the many over the one are double-minded. And James tells us that those who are double-minded are not pure of heart. Isn't that exactly what Jesus told us? "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." A paraphrase. "Blessed are those who focus upon God, for they shall see Him." The message is simple. We see what we focus on, and that brings us to our final road sign. The third road sign presents us with a choice between the seen and the unseen. We just talked about the power of focus. A natural question is, where should we direct that focus? Focus by itself is not a virtue. The best criminals are the focused criminals. You could be the most focused person in the world, and it'll do you no good if you focus on the wrong thing. Upon what should we focus? And God answered that question with a wonderful paradox. We should focus on that which we cannot see. We live in a secular world that rejects the unseen. Most people focus on the seen because they think that's all there is. And that is not just a modern phenomenon. Why was the rich fool in Luke chapter 12 a fool? Because he focused only on what he could see. And why was Moses a pillar of faith, the evidence of things not seen? Because Moses looked to his unseen reward rather than to the treasures of Egypt. And again, it is the Apostle Paul perfectly trying to teach you. We do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal, Paul tells us. When I read that verse, I think of a very famous citizen of Alabama. someone Winston Churchill once called the greatest woman of our age. I'm speaking, of course, of Helen Keller. And here's what she said about that verse. It gives me a deep, comforting sense that things seen are temporal and things unseen are eternal. And she also said, to be blind is bad, but worse is to have eyes and not see. And that is true of so many. They have eyes, but they cannot see. Don't be like them. Choose the unseen. Choose the permanent over the temporary. You're graduating today, and soon you will start off on new pathways and in new directions. It's an exciting time. It's a frightening time. And at some point, you will look up and wonder where you're headed in your life. The answer to that question is simple. If you want to know where you're headed in life, look at the road you are on. No one who gets on Interstate 10 in Alabama and heads west should be surprised when they eventually get to Texas. But so many people react with surprise when they reach the destination to which their decisions and their choices have naturally led them. The key to reaching the right destination is to get on the right road and stay on the right road. And the people on that road choose truth over desire. They choose one over many, and they choose the unseen over the seen. They look for those road signs, and then they choose their path with deliberation and with wisdom. We've looked today at three road signs, three choices you will face time and time again. And in describing those choices, I've spoken about a number of famous people. I want to end by mentioning one last person. Elisha Kaufman. You may not recognize the name, but I'm sure you will recognize what he wrote. He lived from 1839 to 1929, and he wrote over 2,000 Christian hymns, including Leaning on the Everlasting Arms, Have You Been to Jesus, Is Thy Heart Right with God? And he also wrote my favorite hymn. And it is with the words of that song that I will leave you here today. No better advice to be given on this day of your graduation, or on any day, than the words of this hymn. No better basis for decision making could be given to you today than the words of this hymn. To Christ be loyal and be true. His banner be unfurled and borne aloft till it secure the conquest of the world. To Christ be loyal and be true. He needs brave volunteers to stand against the powers of sin, moved not by crowds or fears. To Christ be loyal and be true. In noble service prove your faith and your fidelity, the fervor of your love. To Christ the Lord be true, for he will go with you and help with all your